This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
It's time to go over to speak to our Dr. David Dearden, and today we're chatting about epilepsy. What is it? Why would you get it? And what can you do about it? Welcome back to the show, Dr. David.
Thank you. Lovely to join you again.
Lovely to talk to
what
you.
What a lovely summer we're having, eh?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, it's lovely. It really is. But every year seems hotter than the last, don't you think?
I do. It's just getting warmer and warmer and sooner. But we complain when it's cold and wet, don't we? So we have to be grateful, really.
We're never happy. We're British.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so I was reading a little about epilepsy. I know we've covered this before, but I didn't realise how bad the statistics are. So I've got that around 50 million people worldwide have epilepsy, which makes it one of the most common neurological diseases globally. That's crazy.
It is, isn't it? But it's a lot more common. It's numerically, it's quite common. As a percentage of the population, when you actually look at it, it's about 1 to 1.5% of the population.
Mm.
So it's 1 in 100 people probably have it. So if you look at your Facebook likes and your friends, probably, you know, if you've got 500 likes or 400 likes, 4 or 5 of them will be epileptic to some degree. So it's an interesting and more, as you say, more common condition than you would give it credit for in you know, when you just think about it.
And can it develop at any time, or is it something that people are generally born with?
No, it can develop at any time. You can be born with it, and that could be due to injury during birth. Or even injuries in the uterus, you know, can damage the brain and cause this to happen. Nutrition or oxygen, lack of oxygen or so on, can be factors. So they can occur at or before birth, but they can also develop afterwards. So let me think, following perhaps head injuries or brain tumours or strokes. And sometimes they can develop with people over time. So it's from that point of view, it isn't just something you can have from birth. Although a lot of people that we might know about epilepsy, we maybe had one or two people at school that we knew that were epileptic, and yes, those are often diseases that are associated with people from birth.
Yeah, I suppose it can be varying degrees. I mean, I know that people can have seizures, which is obviously awful for them and the people that are around them. But I knew somebody once that had epilepsy, and all that would happen was he'd go into a stare and his bottom lip would start twitching. So, you know, there are varying degrees and varying signs and symptoms, I suppose.
Well, over the years, we've come to understand it better. Certainly since I was at medical school, it's changed a lot. And it's now very, very, very much more detailed classified, because with the advent of modern technology and scientific investigations, we can actually look at the brain and see what's actually going on. When I was at school, we had the people who had the grand mal fat bits that you probably, you know, remember. And then there was the people with the vacancy fits, and they were just what we thought it was. But anybody really who has episodes where they're temporarily confused, or they have areas where sometimes when they get spasm or stiffness in their muscles, sudden loss of consciousness, sudden overwhelming psychological feelings like fear, anxiety, or feelings of deja vu, where you feel you've been somewhere before. these can all be epileptic episodes. And I suppose these days we really talk about seizures in a different way to in the past. A seizure, I think typically people think it's about when you see someone shaking on one side of their body or the other side of their body. But nowadays we call all epileptic episodes seizures, and it's broken down into basically focal seizures, which are epilepsy occurring from one part of the brain where the patient remains conscious throughout the event, or epilepsy from one part of the brain which is also associated with loss of consciousness or reduced awareness, shall we say. And those are really called seizures, and they can come from any part of the brain. The brain is divided into different lobes, and each lobe has a different function. For instance, right at the back of your head is where all the visual nerves are located. So if you have a seizure from there, you might get visual or visual sensory aura type sensations. The frontal lobe is really to do with personality and controls movement as well. So people might have they might move their head around, or they may have funny sensations. They might start laughing uncontrollably, or flex something, or rock backwards and forwards. And the temporal areas on the side, just beside your ears, that's associated with your memory. And so that's where people get, again, emotional changes or feelings or funny sensations of smell or taste, etc. And then you get the more focal, physical, generalized seizures, which affect the motor part of the brain, which sits right at the top of the brain, which actually control the muscles that control your skeleton. So that's when you get the spasms in the muscles, quite severe spasms in the arms and legs. There's a whole load of those described. And going back to what I was saying about when we were at school, the children that we knew that would fall on the floor and shake, we would call those grand mal, but they're now called tonic-clonic seizures. And they can happen suddenly. They can cause loss of consciousness and stiffening of the body and twitching, etc. And then this other condition called petit mal, which everybody thought, or not everybody, but a lot of people think, is not such severe spasm, but actually petit mal relates to people becoming absent. They suddenly switch off, and seem to go into a bit of a trance. And these two conditions are really related to much more generalized epileptic episodes within the brain, rather than being focal from one particular part. And so when you look at what an epileptic episode is, it's really where part of the brain or all of the brain starts having a bit of a field day and misfiring and doing things and firing off and sending the messages into the body that it wouldn't normally do. And it can happen anywhere.
So it's a bit like your wiring's gone a little bit funny. You need rewiring, but I'm guessing it's not that simple to put right, is it? Or can you with medication?
So it's not that simple to put right, depending on the cause. And sometimes the causes are not found, and sometimes they are. You know, as I said, the causes could be genetic, could be due to trauma, injury around birth, or head injuries from, you know, an accident, an industrial accident, car accident or something. And so each different one, infections sometimes, for instance, might cause it. So where the infection causes scarring in the brain tissue. And more often than not, what you've got is a part of the brain that's either scarred or injured or had something happen to it where it's really not quite normal tissue, and that becomes a trigger. As I said, sometimes it's due to tumours, and obviously those can be treated with surgery. But otherwise, treatment is really directed towards reducing the severity of of the condition, and using a variety of drugs to actually dampen down the brain and make sure it's not so sensitive to stimuli. And there are lots of stimuli that can drive epilepsy. Things like flashing lights, I think we all know about that one. There's all the warnings when people go to concerts or they look at strobe lights and so on. They can induce epilepsy. Lack of sleep, drug use, stress can do it sometimes. And then crazy things like, dehydration or just illnesses that are just sufficient to reduce the body's well-being. And then, of course, alcohol is a neurotoxic drug, so that can be a problem. And, of course, the other one that, is if people have been diagnosed as epileptic who are taking medication, if they forget to take the medication, then that obviously increases the risk of having an epileptic episode.
Yeah.
Sometimes...
Sorry, David. I was just going to say, I'm thinking about a stroke because, of course, a stroke is I believe, a bleed in the brain. Could somebody who's had a stroke then develop epilepsy?
Yes. I mean, if you have a stroke and then that's a bleeding stroke, so there are two types of strokes, but one would be a bleeding stroke where a swelling on the side of a blood vessel burst and there was a bleed into the brain. As that hematoma, that bleed dries up and becomes solid and then scars, that could have an effect, and the scar repair could have an effect on the brain around the area and could become an electrogenic focus, which could drive an epileptic episode. And sometimes if you've had the other type of stroke where the blood supply gets blocked to a certain part of the brain, that piece of the brain will die and again will have a scar, and that again can lead to electrogenic episodes.
Yeah.
Not always, but in some cases.
And if somebody had, say myself, I'm in my 50s, all of a sudden I have an epileptic fit, I've never had one before, maybe due to stress, for example, could that be a one-off, or does that mean that I'll always be prone to them then for the rest of my life?
No, it's a very good question, actually. So you wouldn't be diagnosed as being epileptic unless you've had more than one episode. A one-off episode could just be, everybody's allowed to have one epileptic type episode, and you wouldn't be diagnosed as epileptic. You would be if there were more than one episode. So, yes, you could have an epileptic episode due to stress, and I've seen plenty of people who have had episodes where they've been shaking or something, and when you delve into their background, they've got a very heavy job or they're very stressed, but they're also drinking too much alcohol or smoking too much or using drugs or whatever. And if you change everything and they don't have another fit, then you would never call them epileptic. So you'd be stimulated, but not epileptic. But if they become, they occur more than once, then there'll be a need to investigate the patient and then start treatment if it was ongoing.
Mm. And what do they do? Do they do a brain scan to try and diagnose it?
Well, there's so many different tests that can be done. I think the first thing that people would have done would be something called an EEG, an electroencephalogram, where they put a load of little sensors on the scalp and then measure the brain wave, and then that will give us a tracing, and we look at the brain wave functions and see if they're different from normal. And that would be complemented with either CT scans or MRI scans, or sometimes special types of MRI scans called functional MRI scans, when they look at the blood flow through the brain when the brain's working. And that's a useful piece of information to have. And then there are other things, for instance, like PET scans, which look at blood flow and vocalization of inflammation. That could be used in some cases, particularly if the previous scans, the MRI scans and the EEG, were not helpful. And then there's a thing called photon emission CT. It's again a special type of X-ray scan of the head that's used to pinpoint where the brain's firing from when the epileptic seizure actually happens. And then there's other sort of more general tests that can be done. And then all those things together would be linked up with a variety of other very complicated tests, which will be done by experts who would be, you know, trying to focalize focalize on you know, where the actual lesion, where the trigger point is, or the center of the seizure is coming from.
And presumably, apart from living a healthy life, there's no real prevention. It could just happen.
Well, I think the way to stop it really is to avoid the triggers. Obviously, if you've had childhood injury or pre-birth injury, that's something you can't. But all the things like stress and flashing lights and alcohol and excess are helpful. But that doesn't mean that you're going to actually not have a seizure. And obviously, if you do have a seizure, I think the message really is that you need to go and see someone and get checked out, because, you know, if it happens once, that's fine. But don't want anybody to be sort of self-managing and say, well, I've just had one seizure, I'm not going to bother about it. I think you do need to go and see somebody and probably be referred to a neurologist who would be obliged to do a number of tests to double check and make sure that there's nothing obvious happening. But I think anybody that's had a seizure of some description like that should be seen by a neurology specialist, who can then focus and drive the diagnostic pathway and investigate properly to make sure there's nothing barn door there.
Yeah.
Like a small stroke or a scar from a birth injury, or heaven forbid, a small tumour or something. But these things are very rare, but they need to be excluded.
Yes, very important to get checked out. Funnily enough, well, not funnily enough, because it was awful, but my dog had an epileptic fit a few weeks ago, and it was the most frightening thing, David. We woke up in the middle of the night and heard her rolling around, and she's quite an old dog, and we really thought that was it. You know, she looked like she was having a stroke. We rushed her in the middle of the night to the vets, and they said, well, she's had an epileptic fit. She might never have another in her life, but in case she does, they gave us something, a syringe. You know, we have to give her this syringe if it happens again. Presumably, can that be done for people? Because if you're around somebody and they suddenly have an epileptic fit, what are you supposed to do?
Well, I think the treatment is really protecting the patient and protecting the person and making sure they're safe. So certainly, you know, if someone has an absence and collapses, you've got to try and catch them and stop them and get them on the floor and comfortable, remove anything that's dangerous around them, tables, chairs or whatever, and call the ambulance. I think that's all you can do. If people are having fits that are affecting their breathing, you just got to make sure they've got a clear airway. Those are the type of things where first aid training is very useful. People talk about swallowing their tongue and so on, which is quite a dramatic description, but clearly someone who's actually clenching their teeth very, you know, in a seizure that's affecting the facial muscles, need to make sure they're breathing through their nose, and you need to keep them well ventilated. But, you know, you don't put your fingers in their mouth, because they can clamp their teeth shut very, very quickly and unexpectedly, and they don't let go. So you have to be knowing what you're doing to intervene any more than protecting the patient and calling an ambulance, making sure they're on, you know, they're on the side, the recovery position, so that they can breathe normally, and they're not on their back, and if they're banging around, put cushions around them and so on, so they're not going to hit anything hard, and then get medical help there as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's all scary stuff, but that's why it's important to talk about these things.
Absolutely. And a lot of these people who have these conditions know about it. I remember when I was at school, I had a very, very good friend, and we would play football, and suddenly he would just drop to the floor and have one of these grand mal seizures. And he would talk to us through clenched teeth and says, "All right, it's all right, just leave me alone, just take me to the side, I'll be all right in a minute." And he would do that, and then 10 minutes later he'd be back up playing football again. But they often get very tired after this, because obviously it's exhausting if the brain's firing uncontrollably. So often they go into a deep sleep after the fit stopped. And the doctors, the emergency rooms will give drugs to really, almost like a computer, control, alt, delete, to reboot the brain and try and get it, just to give it a relax so it starts working again normally.
Yeah.
But the medication that's needed has to be given into a vein most commonly. And therefore it's not something you can do easily at the side of the road. That's why you need the emergency team there.
Mm.
And often the emergency team these days, particularly the paramedics, carry the drugs with them so they could administer the drugs at the site. In the old days, they didn't carry the drugs, but the paramedics are so well trained these days that they can often do that.
Yeah, and they're excellent over here in Spain. I'm not sure about Gibraltar, but they're very good over here.
Exactly, they're very well, very skilled, and very, very capable professionals. Yes.
Yeah. Thank goodness we know more than we used to then, David. Grand mal and petit mal and all the things I've learned today. I go home with I'm a mine of information when I go home. I just shock people with my knowledge.
I think things have moved on from the days when I trained, but all for the good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they're still doing lots of research on it, so it will only get better.
Well, it never stops. It never stops. I think where we are now, the classification now is much more complicated. I'm sure if I went back to my medical school notes, it would be, five lines. But now it's sort of two pages of definitions. And they're all meaningful in because a lot of these seizures are not necessarily seizures where the body shakes. And so sudden collapse where the muscles just give way and people collapse to the floor, or people will be talking to you and they suddenly stop talking to you, but their eyes are open and they're just in a vacant space. Those are all types of epilepsy.
Yeah, indeed. Well, as always, David, it's been really informative. Thank you for being on the show. We'll chat again next month. How's things your end? How's things at the clinic?
Very good, yes. We're just about to open our operating theatres and our bedrooms. The guys are out from the UK as we speak, just commissioning everything. And it will be doing operations here in Gibraltar next month.
And how can people get in touch with you?
The best way is through the Specialist Medical Clinic in Gibraltar. It's the website, which is www.smc, the Specialist Medical Clinic, .gi. And we have a new website, which is up, but it's not fully functional yet, called gibmed.gi, www.gibmed.gi. Between the two of them, you'll find a bit more about what we're doing, and we've got a big piece of work going on to merge the two websites into one, so that will not be quite so confusing for people. So that's it, and the telephone number is Gibraltar +350 200 499999. And for those on the Costa del Sol, obviously we provide all the day case and medical treatments that you need. But obviously it's a British-based hospital, so it's a little bit like being nearer to home.
Yes, of course. David, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure too. Talk soon.
Take care. Bye.